It's the week between Christmas and the New Year, and that means many of you are probably shuttling to and from the homes of friends and family, driving from Christmas Day brunches to Christmas night parties, and maybe to a New Year's Eve night out or a New Year's Day toast. And it's likely that at some point between all of that zigging and zagging and delivering of presents, you'll have a drink, or maybe two. The sobering fact? Every holiday season, hundreds of Americans die because of drunk drivers. Over the past 5 years, an average of 300 people died in drunk driving crashes in this very week, the week between Christmas and New Year alone. And despite the fact that law enforcement is out in full force, the entire month of December is particularly dangerous. In December of 2016, 781 people died in drunk driving-related crashes. It's a hard thing to talk about, but we opened it up to you, our listeners, and you really surprised us with your honesty.
This is James from Alec, Oklahoma. When I was young, we all drove drunk and while drinking. The fact that quite a few young people from my small town were killed in accidents where alcohol was involved did not quite seem to sink in. I grew up and quit drinking. I was lucky.
I'm a recovering alcoholic, and when I was actively drinking, I drove drunk frequently. I also drank so heavily that I believed there was alcohol in my system almost 24 hours a day. So no matter what time of day I was driving, I believe I was under the influence of alcohol, and I caused a number of accidents. And I am really, really so glad that I am sober today.
This is Steve from Phoenixville, PA. I'm not proud to say that I have driven drunk about a half dozen times in my life. Fortunately for me, there were no consequences. I had a friend, on the other hand, who made a habit of it, did it every week for years and years on end. And for them, there were consequences. As for myself, I don't drink at all anymore, so not an issue.
Roberto is another listener who lived in Puerto Rico for the first half of his life. And he told us that he's driven drunk many times in the past. Roberto said, quote, "Drinking was an everyday thing. Going through the day having five or six beers was customary, and this was something I saw my father, uncles, cousins, and friends do." And even for those of you who haven't driven drunk yourselves, many of you know people who have or still do.
This is Christine calling from Seattle. Almost everyone around me has at least one DUI. The majority of them have 2 to 3 DUIs. They would meet up and hang out, have some drinks, talk about their DUIs, about the night they got caught, how much drinks they had, their court dates, lawyers, jail time, almost like in a heroic way. And then they drive home after having multiple drinks, saying they're not drunk. I do not feel sorry for them at all. I do not understand why they keep doing what they're doing, but seeing them surely makes me not want to become one of them.
And many of you have found solutions or alternative ways to get home from a night out.
I did drive drunk when I was a teen, and there were no consequences because I never got caught. I do take steps to avoid drinking and driving now because I work an hour away from where I live, and were I to lose my license, I'd have no way to get to work because there's no public transport there. Also, I'm a pretty frugal person, and in New Jersey, the fine for drunk driving is a minimum $3,000, and I'd much rather have $3,000 than a drink any day.
Greetings from Amber in Worcester. The way that I avoid trouble with drinking and driving is I jog home from bars. Yes, I play music loud on my phone, or I chat with friends who are already at their place of rest for the evening, and I talk loudly as I jog or trot home. And in about 7 years, I've never had an issue. I always use good judgment.
There's one state that's looking to tackle drunk driving. On December 30th, the night before New Year's Eve, a new law will go into effect in Utah, making it the first state where it's illegal to drive with a blood alcohol level of 0.05 or higher. The rest of the country and D.C. use a 0.08 standard. Dr. Baron Lerner is a professor of medicine and population health at the New York University School of Medicine, and I talked to him about whether Utah's new rule could mean changes for the rest of the country.
Well, I think it's significant in two ways. One, I think, is symbolic. We've been at 0.8 in this country for a long, long time and sort of got stopped there. Other countries have lower levels. So here's one state sort of symbolically saying we can do better. We're going to drop it. And also, there should be benefits in Utah from people driving less in a buzz state, because really what you're talking about between 0.05 and 0.08 is what we might call buzz driving. So hopefully there's going to be a deterrence of that as well.
What does that translate to in terms of actual drinks? Because I think when people hear this, they're it seems very abstract. But does that mean, is 0.05 one glass of wine, two shots? What is it?
It's different in different people, which lends some people to say there's no way to measure that, and I think that's unfair. I think on average, 0.05 might be 2 to 3 drinks on an empty stomach. I would encourage people, if they're interested in this and they don't want to drive drunk or buzzed, it's very easy to get a breathalyzer and do a little experiment in your own house. But you're talking, to get to 0.05, it's not just one drink and a meal. It's you're actually drinking in a substantial way.
So, I mean, is this bill, you said it's symbolic, but will this bill actually save lives? I'm sure that's part of the intent behind the bill.
It is, and I think you'd find different opinions because you're cranking numbers and it's speculative. There's some data from other countries to suggest that you would save lives. I've seen estimates, for example, if the entire United States went from 0.08 to 0.05, you might save something like 500 lives a year. I've seen that figure. But what you're also doing is not just saving lives. Again, you're deterring people from driving drunk in the first place. So you're preventing crashes, you're preventing injuries and that sort of thing as well.
Also, I want to talk a little bit about the history of getting this legal limit down to 0.08 in the United States, which is where we are outside of Utah.
It took a long time to do this. We were at 0.10 for a long time, which is really just way too high. People shouldn't be driving anywhere near that level. To get to 0.08, it took 4 years, and President Clinton at the time withheld federal highway funding from the states that were still at 0.10 to induce them to get their legislatures to pass bills saying we're going to lower it to 0.08 so they could get the money they needed to fix their highways. So it took some arm twisting to get there. And trust me, the alcohol and beverage industry was very much against it and fought it tooth and nail.
Also want to talk about alcohol culture. We sort of talked about that before the segment. The United States has a pretty strong culture of drinking and just drinking, period. Is there something that we should start to think about changing there so we can avoid people driving and drinking?
I thought you were going to say we have a strong culture of drinking and driving.
I think that's the case too, right?
Yes, yeah. I think it's the case. What you said before about going to a bar, having a couple drinks, getting in the car, it's not going to be a problem. I do this all the time. I feel fine. That's very common here. It's estimated that, I think, 115 million trips a year occur with someone intoxicated behind the wheel. Other countries take this much more seriously. We often talk about Australia, where there are breathalyzers in bars, there are breathalyzers on wine tours, and everybody breathalyzes before they get in their car to make sure it's safe. There are countries, for example, in Scandinavia and other parts of Europe where the blood alcohol level limit is 0.02. It's basically you have a drink and you get pulled over, you're going to get in trouble and you're going to get severe offenses. Those countries take it very seriously. And I will tell you that many of those countries are heavy drinking countries. If you think of Scandinavia, there's a lot of drinking there. So it's not that people are against drinking. It's if you're going to drink, come up with a different way to get home.
You were saying that there are some countries that you've experienced where the host of a party will actually ask who a designated driver is.
Right. For example, Sweden, that's commonplace. If you're going, for example, to a house party, the host will greet the two people if they came in a car and ask who's going to be the designated driver for the night and then make sure that they have a good time and have non-alcoholic beverages. I have been to lots of parties in this country. It's never happened once.
Let's talk a little bit about the drinking and driving itself. Is there a generational divide in who's drinking and driving? Are younger Americans more aware of the dangers?
Well, it's funny you ask that. I just got through teaching my undergrad class at NYU, and one of the sessions is on drunk driving. And I asked, as I do every year, how many of these students, when they were in high school, got into a car with an impaired driver. And this year was, I have my hand up, but only about two of the 30 students did it this year. And we talked about it a little bit, and they said, you know, this is one topic that they got hammered home in high school. You just don't do this. And to the degree that that's true, it's very encouraging.
What's unique here about Utah is obviously the Mormon faith in Utah might influence this decision as well, or might have influenced this decision. Do you see this taking hold outside of Utah?
Well, in Utah, if folks have visited there, I mean, there's a lot less alcohol in Utah in general. If you want to go find a bar in most places, it's pretty easy. It can be difficult even in Salt Lake City. I'm not thinking this is going to spread like wildfire at all. I think people are going to be paying attention to what's going on in Utah and seeing. I think if there's some data generated suggesting that this is lowering the rates of drunk driving and lowering the rates of deaths, states are going to look at it more closely. But I think in states besides Utah, this would meet with an enormous amount of opposition, and it may not be where state legislatures want to go.
It's obviously the holiday season. Any tips for people on drinking and driving, or what they should avoid, or just dealing with the pressures of alcohol generally?
Well, one of the biggest tips that I've learned about it in studying this over the years is that think about where you're going and what you're about to do. Once you're tipsy or drunk, you're not going to make good decisions. So one of the teaching points here is set up your designated driver before. It's in the world of Uber and Lyft, it's way easier than it ever has been. So think about that if you're going to drink, where you're going to be, how you need to get home, and how you're going to do that in advance.
Dr. Baron Lerner is a professor of medicine and population health at New York University School of Medicine. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you.